Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Best advice for people who are just finding out that they're pregnant is literally like celebrate with your family and then start looking for childcare.
How Alaska's childcare crisis is affecting Anchorage families. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 8th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, researchers are crowdsourcing river ice photos to help predict potential floods.
We saw real potential in sharing observations up and down river through our phones that hadn't been a part of the ice monitoring.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
In rural Alaska communities, village public safety officers make a difference every day. Hired regionally, VPSOs are trained in public safety services such as community policing, fire prevention, life-saving emergency medical response, and search and rescue. VPSO receive competitive pay, benefits, and opportunities for advancement. To start your career in public safety and learn more about becoming a VPSO, go to vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by VPSO.
A search is underway for 2 climbers in Denali National Park whose tracks, rangers say, led to the path of an avalanche. According to the Park Service, 34-year-old Eli Michael of Indiana and 32-year-old Nafayun Aiwal of Seattle were last heard from early Friday. They told a friend through a satellite communication device that they planned to climb the west ridge of the Moose's Tooth. The 10,000-foot peak is about 50 miles north of Talkeetna. The 2 men never checked in again. National Park rangers based in Talkeetna searched the area on Sunday. They found the pair's unattended tent, ski tracks that led to the base of the route where they switched to boots and crampons, and finally, boot tracks leading into a recent avalanche. The Park Service says further ground search is limited due to crevasses and risk of rock falls and avalanches. A search by helicopter was ongoing today. The Central Council of the Thlinget and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska is withdrawing from the Alaska Federation of Natives. Thlinget and Haida is Alaska's largest federally recognized tribe. Its executive council voted to withdraw from AFN at a meeting last week. In a statement, President Richard Chahayish Peterson said the tribe can manage relationships with the state and federal government on its own. AFN has more than 200 tribal and corporate members. Peterson was unavailable for comment today. Spokespeople for AFN did not reply to requests for comment. A bill that would allow the state to keep people in psychiatric facilities against their will for up to 2 years passed the state Senate today. The bill gives prosecutors the ability to request a 2-year commitment to keep the public safe if the defendant has a history of violence and is a danger to themselves or others. It also requires the state law department to ask for an involuntary commitment if someone has criminal charges dismissed against them because of incompetency. The bill's sponsor, Senator Matt Klayman, a Democrat from Anchorage, said the bill is necessary to protect the public. He pointed to an incident last year at the Anchorage Library where a woman was stabbed by someone recently found incompetent to stand trial.
2 months earlier, he had attacked 2 other women and then was released to the community after they dismissed his case because he was not competent to stand trial. The man who stabbed Angela should not have been released when they dismissed his criminal case.
Currently, prosecutors can ask juries to hold people who are found unfit for trial because of mental incompetencies for up to 30 days. That commitment can be renewed up to 6 times. Some civil rights groups, including the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska and the Disability Law Center of Alaska, oppose the bill. Mike Garvey is with the ACLU. He says it's unclear whether the bill would have prevented last year's library stabbing and said it's an unnecessary infringement on civil liberties.
The bill is thinking about it in this way of how long do we need to keep someone off the streets perspective, but our Constitution mandates that we need to think about it as what is the minimum amount necessary.
Garvey also pointed to the state's overburdened psychiatric care system and questioned whether people found incompetent would get adequate care or just be warehoused in jail. The bill passed the Senate 14-6. The House is considering a similar bill. Between lengthy wait lists and rising costs, it's becoming more difficult for families in Alaska to find available and affordable childcare. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more on the strain that the tight childcare market is putting on Anchorage families.
Tawny Jetter picks up toys in the play area for her two sons, 3-year-old Calvin and 18-month-old Emerson, at their Anchorage home.
They're all about trucks and cars. My son picks up his own toys, and they, my little one.
The family moved here from Salt Lake City last July, and finding childcare has been a huge challenge. First, she says, they hired a live-in nanny at the recommendation of their realtor. Jetter says that worked for about 5 months until their nanny broke her foot and couldn't care for the kids.
We had my mother-in-law fly up, and she watched the boys for 2 weeks while we sort of scrambled to try to figure out what we were going to do with childcare.
Jetter says she tried everything, putting her kids on a dozen wait lists, directly reaching out to providers, asking anyone and everyone where their daycare was and if there were any openings.
You know, I started feeling like a crazy person because I'd be at the grocery store and be like, the person checking me out kind of looks of childbearing age. Maybe she has some kids. Maybe she has a daycare.
Jetter's not alone. Across the state, Alaska families are having a harder and harder time finding available and affordable childcare. Many daycares have closed during the pandemic, and low wages led to an exodus of workers. Families say it's a crisis, and the lack of care means some are quitting their jobs, considering moving out of state, or putting a big chunk of their income towards care. Rianne Honeman-Keha is the Family Services Manager at Thread Alaska, a nonprofit that works to connect families to childcare and advocate for early education. She says finding childcare has always been a problem, but the pandemic strained the already tight system.
Some have left the state, some have retired, some have just decided to find another career during this time. But there has definitely been a decrease in providers.
Honeman-Keha says childcare openings fill up almost immediately, making them hard to track.
My best advice for people who are just finding out that they're pregnant is literally like celebrate with your family and then start looking for childcare. Like really, and getting on waitlist as early as you can.
Amanda Dale knows the waitlist game. She and her husband spent over a year trying to find childcare for her son Ethan, who's 3 now. Dale says she tracked providers on a spreadsheet, and at times there would be more than 20 kids ahead of her son on a list. After months of waiting, she was emotional when they finally got a spot last August.
So a woman from the preschool called and said, we have a full-time spot for your son. And I started crying and I apologized to her, you know, like, gosh, I must seem like very weird that I'm crying about this. And she said, oh no, it happens all the time. Like people are so relieved to get a call from me.
Even after families like Dale's secure a spot, the struggle doesn't stop. Since there's such a tight market, childcare has become increasingly expensive for families. Dale says she and her husband pay more than $1,400 a month for their son, and now she's thinking about when their 7-month-old daughter Lena will need childcare too.
When we first enrolled him, it was 2 months upfront and startup fees, so we paid over $3,000 that first month, which is nuts. And when she starts, there's a small discount, which is great for siblings, but it'll essentially be about $2,700 a month.
Other families are just starting the search. Jamie Smith is pregnant and due in October. She already has her baby on a bunch of wait lists. She says she plans on going back to work in February when her baby is about 4 months old. But Smith wonders, what if they never get into daycare?
Does my husband quit his job? Do I quit my job? Does one of us go part-time if we can only find part-time childcare? And we don't have family in the state. So then you have to think of, well, if we really can't find anywhere, do we have to leave the state and move? And then you have to sell the house.
For some parents, the patience of waiting does pay off. Jetter, the mom from earlier with 2 young boys, finally found a childcare provider after one of her husband's coworkers clued them into an opening. She's thrilled, but still feels a little nervous on their first day away from home.
My 3.5-year-old, he's fine. I know he's super excited about it, but my little one, you know, breaks mama's heart a little bit, but she sent me a couple pictures, so I think they're doing okay.
For other families, the search continues. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage teens might get more sleep next year if new school start times are approved.
The benefits so far outweigh the consequences of the changes, and people adapt.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh. It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Snowmelt accelerated erosion of a Tanana riverbank at Salcha over the weekend. National Weather Service hydrologist Ed Plum says increased flow caused the river to carve into the bank, including at the location of an unoccupied home.
And yesterday, that house started to fall into the river, and a lot of the water from the Tanana is now pushing up against the Richardson Highway there.
Plum emphasizes that the situation is not the result of an ice jam, but increased flow through a channel where the river has shifted in recent years.
The river's starting to migrate a little bit closer to the road.
Plum says a bar building as well as homes downstream could be threatened as warmer temperatures increase runoff into the river from snowmelt.
Could likely cause more significant erosion.
The State Department of Transportation is working to shore up the area. DOT Northern Region spokesperson John Peralt says rock was dumped along the riverbank yesterday and overnight to slow down the erosion.
It is an area that we've been aware of for a long time, but the erosion has accelerated to the point where we really needed to take steps.
Peralt says the DOT is keeping close watch on the entire Richardson Highway Tanana River corridor from Salcha to Delta Junction for erosion trouble spots as breakup and snowmelt progress. Girdwood firefighters rescued a fisherman yesterday who sank up to his waist in Turnagain Arm mud. The man, who has not been identified, was fishing for hooligan near the mouth of the 20-mile river when his leg became trapped. People in the area tried to free him for about an hour. They didn't have much luck, says Manch Garhart, Girdwood Fire and Rescue's deputy chief.
If you are deeper than your knee, it's very difficult to get out. The only way is to lean forward and kind of fulcrum your body to use the back of your heel to try to pop up and drive your heel up to break that suction.
Fire crews were called at about 1:30 p.m. Garhart says they used special rescue gear, including a tool that can pump air and water into the mud, and they freed the man in about 14 minutes. He wasn't hurt, and the nearby Seward Highway remained open. This is the second time in about 6 months that Girdwood firefighters have rescued someone from the Turnagain Arm mud, which can trap people like quicksand in the rising tidewaters. Garhart says people should be cautious in the area and travel in groups so someone can go for help if needed. They should also watch their footing.
We always say don't go past the grass when you're on the mud. That's going to be the safest spot to go. And then if you are going to be out past the grass in the mud flats, don't stand in one location.
Garhart urges anybody who sees someone get stuck to dial 911 immediately. 5 years after Ketchikan surgeon Dr. Eric Garcia was found dead, the man accused of killing him is on trial in Anchorage. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
The state of Alaska is accusing 38-year-old Jordan Joplin of killing Garcia and attempting to ship Garcia's valuables to Washington State. The trial started Monday in Anchorage Superior Court. Garcia had worked at Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center for a decade before he was found dead on March 27, 2017. Ketchikan police say Joplin called them, saying he was a close friend of Garcia's and that Garcia hadn't been seen in 10 days. Joplin said he had last visited Garcia on March 16th. Police say Joplin left Ketchikan the day after the phone call. There wasn't a clear cause of death for Garcia when he was discovered dead at his home. His body was sent off for a standard autopsy. Later, police would request a toxicology report. But just a day after Garcia was found dead, money started to leak out of his bank account. Police said they were able to trace the money to Joplin and he was indicted on a felony theft charge. Garcia's family also reported that some of his valuables were missing shortly after his death. The doctor was known to have collections of expensive watches, wines, and hard liquor. According to police, Joplin had shipped Garcia's personal belongings to his Washington address. The shipments were intercepted with the help of Washington police. Joplin was extradited from Washington to Ketchikan on first and second degree murder charges along with theft. He's been in custody for the past 5 years. Joplin's trial had been pushed back several times and delayed even further by the COVID-19 pandemic. It was originally moved to Juneau due to the amount of publicity surrounding the case in Ketchikan, and was then moved even further to Anchorage. An administrator in Anchorage's court system told KRBD the trial was slated to last 6 weeks. Jurors were chosen last week. Superior Court Judge Michael Wolverton is handling the case. Joplin is being represented by public defender Mary Fleming Burnell of Anchorage. The trial is being live streamed. A link is available with this story at krbd.org. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Anchorage school start times could be rearranged for the next school year under a proposal that the school board is considering at its meeting tomorrow night. It's the second such effort by the Anchorage School District in the past 7 years and follows the guidance of researchers who say middle and high school students should start classes later in the morning. But as Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky reports, some parents say the change would be disruptive, and it remains uncertain how the school board will vote this time around.
The Anchorage School District started looking into changing school start times in 2016 after the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended middle and high school students begin classes after 8:30 a.m. The school board ultimately voted against the changes in 2018, and the school district reintroduced the measure in February of this year.
And there have been tremendous family climate improvements in districts that have done this, where families are no longer at war with their children over getting out of bed in the morning.
Shannon Bingham is a consultant who's worked with the district on both proposals to change school start times. He says that student wellness and performance improve during the first class periods of the day when schools start later. Bingham cited support from medical professionals for the change. Currently, high school students begin at 7:30 a.m., followed by middle school at 8:15 and elementary school at 9. The new recommended schedule would see elementary school students begin class at 8 a.m., followed by high school at 8:45 and middle school at 9:30. Lisa Meltzer is a pediatric psychologist who specializes in sleep medicine and studied a Colorado school district that made a similar change. At a meeting in February, Meltzer told the Anchorage School Board that student and parent sleep habits improved and car crashes involving student drivers decreased.
It's not easy. Change is hard. It affects a lot of people. But again, the benefits so far outweigh the consequences of the changes, and people adapt.
While the change to start times would be a part of a national trend and is supported by research, many Anchorage parents say it would cause a huge disruption to their lives. In many cases, that's because their schedules for work, transportation, and childcare are built around the school start times as they are. Jessica Randolph is an Anchorage teacher with elementary age children.
I think that a larger number of people within our district would be impacted negatively by this change. So at this time, I don't think that it would be a beneficial change to the district as a whole.
Bingham, the consultant, conceded there are some challenges that would come along with the change, particularly for older students who play sports, have a job, or are responsible for taking care of their younger siblings, and for parents struggling to find, pay for, and schedule childcare. There are some parents in support of the change who think the mental and physical health benefits, as well as the potential for improved academic performance, might outweigh any difficulties. Leah Filippi is one of them. Filippi was in favor of the change when it was voted down in 2018 and still feels like a later start time would benefit her son in high school.
I think this change is long overdue and the district should make it as soon as possible.
And at least one school board member is in favor. Board President Margot Bellamy spoke at the February meeting.
I think that's a good thing. We get to look at it with fresh eyes and fresh ears, and knowing that the data shows that it's good for kids and adults.
Dave Donley and Andy Holloman are the only current Anchorage school board members who voted on the 2018 proposal, and both voted against changing school start times. It remains unclear how any of the board members might vote on the new proposal, as they either declined to comment or did not respond to questions. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rocky.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
In In many parts of Alaska, river ice is a central part of life in winter, used for transportation, recreation, and subsistence fishing. But ice conditions today are becoming more unpredictable with climate warming. A University of Alaska Fairbanks program is recruiting members of the public to help monitor river ice around the state to inform breakup and flooding forecasts and track long-term changes in the ice. Katie Spellman is an assistant professor at UAF helping coordinate the Fresh Eyes on Ice program.
We have the capability to exchange knowledge so fast now that, you know, we saw real potential in sharing observations up and down river through our phones that hadn't been a part of the ice monitoring programs in the past in Alaska.
All you have to do is snap a photo and send it in with a note marking the location. Contributors can add photos to the Fresh Eyes on Ice Facebook page or website, or even through a citizen science app called Globe Observer. Spellman says the hundreds of photos the program receives help forecasters model river ice and issue warnings about floods and erosion. This year's cold spring is concerning, she says, because the late snowpack increases the risk of ice jam flooding on Alaska's major rivers. She says photo submissions also help to preserve a record of what river ice looks like right now.
In climate research, those images, you know, that if you take one today, the value increases through time because we want to see how it was in the past.
It's still unclear exactly how climate change will affect ice and flooding, since rivers could see thinner ice growth but heavier precipitation or unpredictable freeze-thaw cycles. For more information on how to contribute a photo of river ice anywhere in Alaska, visit fresheyesonice.com. Earlier this year, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration proposed listing the sunflower sea star as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. The proposal comes as disease has wiped out billions of sea stars from California up the western coast to the Aleutians in Alaska. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, the agency is now asking for public comment ahead of its decision.
Sea star wasting syndrome is one nasty bug. When it infects a sunflower sea star, one of the largest kinds of sea stars, it causes blister-like lesions and the creature's legs to fall off, killing the animal within 72 hours. What's left behind is essentially a pile of goo where it disintegrated.
And then the ocean currents carry that goo away, and 10 days or 2 weeks you might have absolutely nothing remaining of the animal.
Sadie Wright is a protected resource biologist with NOAA. She says the mortality rate is 90% in some areas of the sunflower sea star's range, spanning from southern California out to southwestern Alaska, and billions of sea stars have died from the disease in the last decade. NOAA received a petition back in 2021 to protect the animal under the Endangered Species Act. In March, the agency announced it was proposing to list the species as threatened in response, and now it's gathering public comments as part of a review process that will decide whether the sunflower sea star will ultimately be listed as threatened or not. Wright says the agency is hoping to fill in data gaps about the species, particularly in the waters off Alaska's coastline.
We have some data. We have really good data, time series data in a couple of places, but it would be great to get a broader perspective.
Wright was in Kodiak earlier this month for a public hearing about the species as part of NOAA's review. About a dozen people attended. Another dozen called into the meeting. Some fishermen said they noticed a dip in the population a few years ago. Recently, though, more healthy-looking animals have been coming up on their gear. Wright says that fits with other reports NOAA has received from the area so far.
It does sound like Kodiak is having a relatively strong recovery of sunflower sea stars. So that definitely gives us reason, I think, to be hopeful.
Researchers don't know exactly what causes sea star wasting syndrome, but Wright says they don't believe it's related to fishing activities. Take would not be prohibited under the proposed threatened listing. Longliners and fishermen using pot gear most commonly encounter the sea stars. Wright says anyone can submit information or input on the process, and it's all helpful. Photo submissions are even better.
We're asking people going forward if they could provide a measurement from the center of the animal's body out to the tip of its longest arm.
Members of the public can submit comments to NOAA through May 15th. If the agency issues a threatened listing, the soonest it would go into effect would be March of next year. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Mana Management Services held a special lunch event for students in Bethel. The company's chefs were invited to the Iaprun Ilit Narvik School to provide a meal for kindergarten through 12th grade students. On the day's menu, macaroni and cheese. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello followed the school's principal, Joshua Gill, through the school and has this audio postcard.
Come tell me about the, let's talk about your macaroni and cheese. Stay seated, look at me. Stay seated, we'll come to each table, okay? We'll start right here. Look at these guys. Lovely. What did you get in your macaroni and cheese?
I got macaroni and cheese.
Yeah? What's your favorite part of it?
Bacon.
Bacon? What did you add to yours?
Ham and sausage.
Have you tried yours?
Yeah, I had bacon and sausage.
What was your favorite part?
Macaroni and cheese.
The macaroni and cheese, yep.
What is that?
Sausage.
Sausage? What do you think you like about the sausage? It's gonna be good. Did you know that was made from reindeer? Okay, come real loud, tell me your name. Okay, take your carrot out, talk first.
Achukuk.
Achukuk, yep. Tell them about your mac and cheese.
It tastes good.
So, Jacob, tell me about your macaroni and cheese again. You were talking about it when we were coming down. What's in it?
Spam and... Wait, is that spam?
That's ham, but it's like spam.
Wait, it's like spam?
Yeah, it's just not ground up. Connor, tell me about your favorite part.
Yep.
Getting the
like
food.
The bacon?
I have a lot of cheese in my macaroni.
You think, are you going to mix it or are you going to eat them by himself?
Eat them.
You're going to mix them up? They'll be yummy, huh?
Not mix them up.
What did you get?
I got...
What is that green stuff?
Got...
Broccoli?
Broccoli.
Yeah, and ham?
Ham.
What do you think is going to be your favorite part?
My favorite is...
Okay,
like pineapple.
Pineapple is your favorite part? Whoa. Oh, you want to tell about pineapple? Go ahead, tell them about the pineapple.
This is my friend and me, both, the pineapple is really sour, but if you put a little bit more, if you put some salt on it, it would taste good.
Mm-hmm, what about you?
I hate macaroni and cheese.
You got noodles, though.
I like noodles.
What's going on? What do you got in yours?
I like bacon.
You like bacon?
Yeah.
What else is in there? Is there cheese?
Cheese.
And what else? Is there noodles?
Noodles.
Are you going to mix it up?
Yeah.
Yeah? Are you going to eat it all? Is it going to be super yummy?
Yeah.
Are you going to be too full? No? Awesome. Awesome. That is great.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea, Wesley Early, Chris Clinton, Kavitha George in Anchorage, Lex Trinan and Katie Anastas in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak, and Francisco Martinez Cuello with that cheesy story out of Bethel. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.